I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Dr. David Pierce. He is an entrepreneur, a dentist, and a keynote speaker. David grew his practice to the top 1% of revenue nationwide, and then he sold it. Now he's pursuing his second life dream, coaching other dentists on the business side of dentistry. And the name of that business is is Ultimate Success in Dentistry. And he's also the author of Peak Success, an Entrepreneurial Guide to Business Prosperity. Now, you may be listening and thinking, "Well, I'm not a dentist. How's this going to apply to me?" I've been talking to David, and I can tell you that he has some keen insights that anybody running a business needs to hear. So listen in. This is going to be an interesting episode. David, welcome.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for the invitation. It's an honor to be with you, sir.
Yeah. And so, let's just kind of start off where we were, before we hit record. You know, I have this perception that, dentists, they go to dental school, they run their practice for, 30, maybe 40 years, live a comfortable life, retire in a comfortable way. It's a safe, financially rewarding career. But you're telling me that that's a little bit of a misperception.
That's a big misperception.
Really? How so?
Well, I would say the liability of dentistry as a business is that you don't have to do anything special and you'll probably be able to keep your doors open. So a restaurant can't do that. They just go away. You see it all the time. Closed, another one. They're not doing anything special to keep the door open. But dentists can make just enough money to keep it going. And I appreciate you talking about the first book. So I wrote a second book, which is not being published. It'll be available to the public in one way or another. But it really kind of looks at two things. One is, as a dentist, when you get out, any profession, you go to college and you have college buddies, and then they go off and they get jobs and you go on to more school. So you're getting more and more debt while they're earning money. And when you come out 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years later, your income is actually very low. And all your buddies have all these toys and you kind of feel entitled, like, I deserve the new car, the nice house, the nice this. And banks will loan you money because they say you have great earning potential, which is nothing. You can't take potential to any bank other than that. So you come out and think, I own this. And also too, I think, Craig, I know this, that society would put a lot of pressure and say, well, you're a doctor. You should be living this. You should be driving that. You should be had this lifestyle. And they get sucked into that at a very young age, of feeling like that I deserve this. And this profession I chose is going to just spew out enough money to totally take care of this. And that part is wrong. It's no different than an amazing athlete who just doesn't do the work. They got the gifts. They got the education. They got the skill set, the dentist. But unless they do the business side right, it's just going to be an average income and they're going to spend it all. I know so many dentists and they're fifth, sixth, seventh decade of life that cannot retire, or if they do, their lifestyle is going to just nosedive.
Wow.
Because of that.
You know, I see that a lot. It's almost a joke. I look on Facebook and there's some coach or consultant or what have you, and they get their picture taken in front of a private jet they never flew on, or in front of a mansion that they don't own.
Sure.
It's, I think there's something with any entrepreneur is you want to be viewed as successful. And so when you're making these choices, the housing choices, the car choices, the vacation choices, you choose a projection of who you want to be as opposed to who you are.
That's very fair. Right. And, you know, I think that if you can look around, which you can in anything, you know, I can find a plumber here in my town who is very wealthy. I mean, he owns the plumbing place. He has many, many employees, and he's gotten there because he knows how to run the business. And I know, and you know this too, Craig, and your listeners do too, that sometimes you can be like, well, I work in a plumbing place. How hard can it be? I'll go off on my own and become a plumber, become fabulously wealthy like the guy that owns this business. And they just don't understand there's so much more to it than just the skill set. Yeah. No matter what you're doing. Same thing when I started my dental career. I thought if I become a master clinician, everything else would take care of itself. And that's a piece of the puzzle. But I would challenge you as a consumer of dentistry, you have no clue whether I do good dentistry or not. Is the guy nice? Does it hurt? What does it cost? Outside of that, it's like, you know, does it fall apart? No, I don't know. But it doesn't, you have no way of telling whether I'm good or not. And the true meaning of clinical mastery. You just don't, any more than I can tell, you know, if an attorney is really good, if a CPA is really good, how would I know?
Yeah. So, you know, you brought up something really interesting there. You know, I'm seeing a lot of stories of people in the trades who are fantastically wealthy. I know one that I grew up with, you know, basically could retire anytime he wanted by the time he turned 50. Mm-hmm. Who was a plumber.
Right.
I know three HVAC companies that sold about 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that sold for the least sold for $100 million.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
And you look at that, but you said something that's really important. And it sounds like whether you're a dentist or a tradesperson or any type of practitioner, the being an expert practitioner is only part of the puzzle.
Right. And I would say, because you can't truly, I mean, the more skilled that's, maybe I'll say the more education that goes into it. Like, could I evaluate, it'd be easier for me to evaluate, did the plumber do a good job? Than I could, like, did the estate attorney do a good job? Did the CPA do a good job? The only way I really know would be comparing it to other returns. How much did I get back? I don't know if that's a good metric. And if I get audited, like, what happens? You know, other than that, how would I know? Whereas the plumber, at least, like, nah, that's dripping. Like, that has an odor around it. Like, you know, there are some basic ways that I could sort of assess, did this person do a good job for me? But it's hard to tell, right? It really is hard to tell.
Yeah.
As a consumer, which isn't bad. It just is, you know? So having that skill set is part, on the flip side of that, having that skill set doesn't mean that, you know, you've met plumbers and dentists and everybody who are just amazingly nice, amazingly, like, I could be a friend with that person. Like, this person treated me well. And on the flip side of that, you've met ones that are just arrogant and think that they, like, you know, they're jerks, and which is okay. That's their choice. But that's all part of that business thing, you know, and to me, that has more to do with it than the skill set, the whole non-clinical, non-fix-it part.
Yeah, so you've obviously done very well. You know, we were talking earlier, you have a house in Florida, you have a house in Montana, you've sold your practice, you're doing your second career.
Yeah.
You're very stable. And you're clearly the outlier. This is a little bit of a surprise to me, but you're the outlier amongst dentists. What do you think it was that made you more successful that helped you map this path?
Well, part of what we talked, there's a lot of things. And when we first started talking off air, one of the things I mentioned is that every entrepreneur, if you ask them to go back in their history, you'll find like failure after failure after failure after failure, not being interpreted as failure, but as I'm going to get back up, I'm going to learn from that, and I'm going to be better tomorrow than I was today because of my failures, not because of my successes, because we learn very little from our successes. We learn from our failures. And so I think that, you know, early on, I got challenged in some really huge ways in my career about, so like, are you just gonna like give up? Like you could give up on a lot of things, not like your story, which might be like, I can give up on biologic life. But everything else aside from that, yeah, you could give up on it. And it was like a choice is like, no, like this, I'm not going to give up. And even though people around me were saying like, I would never do what you're going to do. Like, there's no way in the world I would do that. And I'd be like, well, I'm not listening to you. I'm listening to a voice in my head that said, this is what you got to do. So I'm not sure if there's any one thing. There's probably a series of things, although early on, there's some very big, big challenges that sort of set the definition for who I was going to be.
Yeah. And let me jump in real quick. Something you said that just a second ago, it's people who say, I would never go do that. And I think that is one of the key elements. That's one of the big differentiators to success. You know, and you mentioned my decision to not give up on biological life. I'm starting to run into people that were as sick as I was and miraculously lived because they didn't expect me to live. But people who are nowhere near the level of recovery that I've reached. And when I look at the differences, they weren't willing to go that extra step. And it's not even necessarily a big extra step. It's just one step further than most people are willing to go.
Yeah, that constant one step, right? Yeah. Whether you're running, I mean, if you can't run, then walk. And if you can't walk, then crawl. But if you can't crawl, it's like you don't stop. You just crawl a little slower until you can walk, until you can run again. Yeah. Right.
Now, you were telling me about a setback early in your career where I guess you'd moved somewhere, you'd met someone, you got married, and you'd made all the investments of opening up a practice there, and then you had to give it all up.
Right. Yeah. That's correct.
So what happened?
Well, yeah, moved to a town on my own, found an opportunity, a business opportunity that I felt was great. And it was built a practice, outgrew that space, went into a new space, and then built that space out at a lot of debt, knowing I was going to be there for many, many years. And then along the way, met a woman where I did my residency. We stayed in touch, eventually got married, had two young kids in this town. And so we had one child. Second child is she's my wife was, you know, 6 months or so in her 9 month term. And she came to me at about 3 months into that. And maybe it was just after she got pregnant and said, I can't live here anymore. I have to go home. And so it's like, okay, so I'm going to either lose my family and keep this business, totally great business decision, or I'm going to keep my family and I'm going to have huge debt, do all this thing, and go someplace else. I mean, not only when you sell a business in dentistry, especially because we're not selling widgets, you know, we're selling a service that is, you know, I laugh and say, it's amazing, Craig, like none of those patients in New Hampshire followed me to New York. Like, come on, guys, welcome. It's like, no, they're not going to follow you. So all that goodwill that you build up and people trusting you and wanting to do more and stay with you and refer their friends, that goes away. You start all over again. You take with you what you've learned. Other than that, you take nothing with you. And the debt, of course, is there as well. So the child that was in my wife's womb, of course, you know, 9 months is when you expect him. So at 6 months, that child is born. So with all this stress and like a week before that happened, I remember talking to my parents and saying, you know, of course, like the decision to leave that town, go someplace else, brand new, to say that my wife and my marriage was really solid at that point in time, it's like, no, it was nowhere near solid. We are arguing about that, trying to figure that part out, really young in our lives, as far as, you know, trying to try and figure each other out. Like, why would I think it even work out? Like, we just did this and like, you can't stand this. How do I know any of this is going to work out except that I could be by my kids? So there's all that. And then our child's born 3 months premature. So if you don't know, you know, it's kind of like your condition. You learn a lot about it after you go through it and you meet other people that went through the same thing. So I know a lot about premature children, you know, but at that time it was like, well, you know, there's 1/3 the child's going to die. And there's about 9 times out of 10 of the rest of them that they're going to be severely disabled. Like that's this person that's in your life now. And so just to have all that on top of me. And the idea is like, so why would you get up and in the morning and just do it again, David? Like, why would you, why, you're definitely down to a crawl. Why not just stop, turn around, go the other way? Just like, screw it. And, you know, that's that grit thing. It's like, you know, I'm not, I don't care what other people are telling me. Like, I would never leave this. Like, you got a great business. I would never leave this. Like, people get divorced, David. That shit happens. Like, it's part of our world. And it's like, no, I'm not going to do that. So, you know, so 37 years later, still married to the same kid. Both of our children are healthy and productive members of society. You know, we had, just an amazing blessing that all that stuff worked out from a health standpoint that we couldn't control. And, you know, the rest of it, my wife and I just figured out, like, no, we're a team. We're going to stay a team. And until God says time for one of us to go home, and then, you know, it is what it is. So, yeah. So that wasn't a defining moment, but for sure, you know, if anybody thinks like, yeah, entrepreneurship and so forth is easy, it's like, you actually, I say this to my daughter who has a new business, like, you don't want it to be easy. You want it to be as hard as possible. You want it to be challenged the hell out of you. And you know why? Because that'll keep other people out.
Yeah.
You want it to be a special club called entrepreneurship. And it's not easy. So, yeah. So,
So in terms of if we talk about the business of dentistry, what are some of the top mistakes that you see dentists making in the business of dentistry?
think the hardest thing is maybe two. So dentistry, the only way anybody ever buys anything is that it has to be sold to them. Just like that's just words, right? You can't go to Walmart and buy something. So yeah, somebody sold it to you. Walmart sold it to you. Okay, good. So let's just get the word selling right out there and say, yep, we sell. Everybody sells. Well, dentists as a profession have a very hard time with that word. Like, I don't want to be a salesperson. It's like you are a salesperson, whether you like it or not, you are. You're selling something to somebody. You have to be a salesperson. So then the question is, how do I put my mindset around that word to look at and say, like, a good salesperson is doing a favor to the person that buys because they're looking to buy something and you're helping them make that decision. Is it even right for me? Is this the right time? What does it look like? What's that process look like? How do I know about it? I mean, all that, you're a consultant. You know, a facilitator of that process. You're not, it's not a win-lose situation, but dentists struggle with that huge. And our profession does not, except for very small type institutions that have looked at that and said, like, we recognize it as a problem, but in school or the mainstream is like, no. You don't want to be a salesperson. You essentially want to say, here's all the things you could do. You choose. So here's all the ways we could fix your heart, Greg. Which one do you think you want? Seriously? What cardiologist would you want that to? Oh, I think I'll do the ablation and then maybe I was like, no, you know, same thing with dentistry. Well, no, you're the expert. You tell me what I should do and you stand behind it. Like, no, I know my craft. I know you. I know everything about you. I know what you want. I know what you don't want. I know your budget. I know all that kind of stuff. Here's what I recommend. And that's easy, seems like. But it's so missing, and I think it's so missing in healthcare, period. You know, where it's just not anywhere in healthcare, and dentistry is not controlled by insurance, unlike medicine. So there are some choices, and people are going to pay for it out of their pocket, not an insurance plan. And therefore, it becomes a purchase no different than. You know, am I going to remodel my kitchen or am I going to improve my smile? Am I going to go on a great trip or am I going to give my kids ortho braces? It's, you know, that's if there's any competition in dentistry, it's for discretionary money that people are going to spend on something else in their lifestyle.
Yeah. And when you introduce that, what does that do? What's the impact that has on you as a dentist that you don't see in other areas? I mean, so like my medical bill, of course, this is not what was paid, but my medical bill was like $2 million for 3 months in the hospital. And there were all sorts of stupid things done in that process. But like you're talking about with, you know, braces, you know, did we do braces or did we go on vacation? From the business of dentistry, how do you navigate that? How do you navigate marketing that and helping patients make those choices?
Well, you know, I think that So on the sales side of that, it would be to look at it and say, this is probably the way I would sum it up, Craig, would be, so numbers are numbers, it doesn't matter. So say if you said, there's a $1 million dental practice, and so are revenue-wise. So they collect $1 million or $2 million a year. So say $2 million a year, they collect $2 million a year. And somebody's going to come in and the fees to take care of their treatment is $20,000. So you, Mrs. Jones, are going to write a check for $20,000 to the dentist. And I think a lot of people hearing that, if they've never spent $20,000 or more to a dentist before, might look at that and say, that's ridiculous. That's outrageous. Like, why would you do that? I get that totally. And I said, really? Have you ever bought a new car for less than 20? And 7 years later, it's gone and you do it again. Like, so you do that in your life. You just never did it on dentistry. So there is that to consider. And then if you look at it and say, so Mrs. Jones spends $20,000 on dentistry. When she came in, she covers her mouth. Excuse me, she looks away in photos, very self-conscious about her smile. And when she gets done, she's like beaming. Okay, so let's see who really won. So Mrs. Jones is beaming, like she's never done before in her life. She got the smile back, maybe she had when she was a kid, or the smile she never had. And the dentist office got $20,000. So they have a $2 million annual expected revenue. They got 20, so that's 1%. What are they gonna do tomorrow? We gotta go find another one. So what if Mrs. Jones said no today? Who's the big loser? Mrs. Jones. She's walking around covering her mouth, and we may find another person to come in that wants to do 25 or 30. Great. And Mrs. Jones said no. The business actually makes more revenue. Or the business loses 1%. Like what business, especially, dentistry isn't like the food industry where they're working on a 3% margin. We have a bigger margin. So if your revenue is down 1%, is that going to affect the business? No. So when somebody says yes to dentistry, patient's the big winner, not the business. It's just 1% of the revenue. Patient says no, the big loser is patient. So the message, take home message on anybody in those services is help your patients say yes to whatever is the right treatment for them that's going to change their life, make their life better.
And I think that applies across so many different areas of business.
It does.
Is I can say for myself as marketing, I think, yes, we're not cheap, but absolutely you should spend money on us because we're going to change your business. We're going to help you accomplish things that you want to accomplish that you can't accomplish on your own. And you have to have that conviction to really believe that you're making people's lives better. And if you don't, if you walk into work and you're not sure you're making people's lives better, I don't know, maybe it's time to do something different. Maybe you're in the wrong
Totally agree.
career.
Totally agree. Right. Yeah. Or get way better at what you're doing.
It just,
Yeah. Totally agree.
Well, you also had the other thing that's interesting, you had an office of a staff of six. And people, one is, often one of the leading expenses, but also, one of the biggest challenges. What did you learn about leading people through your career as a dentist?
Yeah, so like I was, I feel like I finally figured it out, but man, it was pathetically slow. Oh my gosh, it's like, oh man, like how so it, so if anybody if you meet me and you hear my journey, it'd be like, okay, that gives me hope. Like, all this guy did is keep getting back up again and keep looking for answers. Like, but he had no particular smarts or anything on his own, and that's still totally true. So for me, I think there's really kind of two models, maybe, Craig, of business ownership. One would be it's autocratic. I, the owner, I decide what's to be done. And basically, you're going to come to me and you're going to ask me, what do I do? And I can't say that's wrong. For me, that I hear that all the time from dentists, and they kind of say, like, I want that. Okay. And then they say, but these people are constantly coming out to me and saying, like, what should I do with this? What should I do with that? How do I take care of that? And it's like, well, careful what you wish for. Because that's exactly the way you're modeling it. So from my standpoint, it's like, how do I create a culture and a safe zone where people can become leaders of their own? And the only way you get there is by making mistakes. So, in science, they call it like theories and hypotheses. So I would just say to my team, like, let's come up with a million different hypotheses of how we can make things better. It can be totally off the wall. It doesn't matter. We're going to try it. We're going to try this, try that. And you know what we'd like to do is we're going to put a great big glass bowl over here, two of them. One of them's going to say all of our things we tried and failed, and one's going to say all the things we tried and it worked. And what I hope is that, what I insist is the one that says all the failures, that fills up with pieces of paper way quicker than the one that's all the successes, because that means we're really trying. That means you guys are trying, you're not taking the safe way. That said, you know, we're trained really young to not take risks, follow the rules. Like, hey, class, see how Susie's doing her stuff? If you were all good like Susie, you'd do what Susie's doing. What does Susie figure out? Do what the teacher tells her. Teacher, what should I do? What should I do? This is what I should do. Like that. And that we get stuck in that mold of, I'm not going to risk that. It's risky to try to do something on your own, because what if it fails? And it's like, I have nobody to blame. But if Craig tells me to do something, it doesn't work. It's like, yeah, it's Craig's idea, not mine.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like creating that safe zone where people are forced to grow, forced to become leaders in their own sense. So that at the very least for me, if somebody came to me, they would be, because we didn't have an office manager. I didn't want one. I don't need somebody to tell people what to do. I want a system set up where they know that, because you know, you in your business, you know exactly what you're doing. The people that work for you should know what they're doing in their space. And in my office, if somebody said to me, so David, the autoclave doesn't work, what should we do? It'd be like, I don't even know how to plug it in. Like, why are you asking me?
Right.
I don't know. Like, you know, like, and for me to learn about it, that's stupid. Like, it makes no sense. You use it every single day. You know way more about it than I do. So one, you identified a problem, it doesn't work. Two, like, great, what are the potential things we have of fixing it? And of those potential ways, what one do you intend to do based on that? So you come to me with that. Dr. Pierce, the autoclave doesn't work. Here's the potential things we could do to take care and remedy it so we get sterile instruments. And what I intend to do is this. Perfect. Now I'm in a position to say, well, actually, I know something about autoclaves, sterilization, which you don't know. I know this, but blah, blah, blah. What do you think about that idea? And we can have a conversation. Or I can just say, great. Thank you. Take care of it. Done.
Yeah.
And that would be at the very least level, you know, of leadership. So team-wise, to me, small teams that are empowered that way, that spreads over, you know, we're talking about sales. So I, as a team person, can actually sell somebody the right dental treatment for them. It'd be like it's just words, right? I mean, you come up with the same words I do, and you believe in what we're talking about, what we're doing. You could probably sell it better than I can, because you have the skill I don't have, one, or, you know, in a hierarchy way, well, Craig, of course, is recommending it to him because he owns the business and he's going to make money off me and all this kind of stuff. But the employee, like, well, if they're that passionate about it, they got nothing to gain except help me. You might be better at it that way.
You know, years ago, I had, there's somebody that works for me named Elena. And I remember she came up to me one day, this was years ago, and she said, she was telling me something, and I was listening and listening and listening. And I said, okay, let me see if I have this right. There was a problem. You identified the problem, you fixed the problem, and you're just here to tell me that it's all been sorted out. And she's like, yeah, that's it. And I'm like, oh, bless you.
Yeah, let me give you a big hug.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
But it's, you know, from the leadership standpoint, what I hear you saying is you have to create that environment where people feel the freedom to do that.
Right.
And one of the necessary costs of that is they will make mistakes, or they won't do it as perfectly as you may have done it.
Right.
And you have to decide what you want more.
That's right.
Do you want perfection, which is going to wear you ragged, right, or do you want people that run help you run your business to a point in such a way that, of course, delights the customers, the patients, the clients.
Right.
But frees you up to do the things that you truly love.
Yeah. And really, you know, everybody should have their own legacy, what they want. And I knew, again, my journey is pitiful. When I first started off, I thought, I'm going to hire people who have minimal bandwidth, if you will, minimal intellectual ability, or enough to do their job, but not too much more, and not incredibly ambitious, because then they'll leave. And when they leave, now I got to find somebody else. So let's keep them dumb and stupid right in this position. And that was how I was dumb and stupid for thinking that way. I'm embarrassed to say it, but that's for sure where I was. And then I started looking and say, but what do you get people that are in a place and they look and say, this, I'm growing in this place. I'm being forced to grow. Like I'm being challenged to grow personally, professionally. We read books about personal growth, As a Man Thinketh, all kinds of stuff. Like I'm getting better as in a dental environment, could be whatever, in a plumber's environment, I'm getting better as a mom because I'm getting leadership things, decision making as a mom, as a spouse, as a Christian, as a citizen. All those things are getting better because of what I'm learning in this dental thing. And from my standpoint, yes, you're going to become a better dental professional. You're going to have better conversations with each other. You're going to have better conversations with patients. So the business is going to do well. But ultimately, and what I got out of it, was team members coming to me and saying exactly what I wanted to be on my gravestone, which is, that Dr. Pierce challenged me to become a better version of myself. And because of that, I'm a better wife. Like, how cool is that? I'm a better mom. I can say things to my daughter, my son, I never know how to or what that would look like in my head. So I never did it. My husband and I have a better relationship because we can have conversations about things. And I can do it in a way where I'm not running away and I'm not attacking him. I'm just staying where I should be because I've become better, a better person. And all that is great, wonderful. It makes the world better. And selfishly, as a business owner, it makes my team's relationship, my business's relationship with the public we're serving better. And so more people say, like, this is where I want to get my dentistry done.
Yeah,
That,
that's pretty awesome.
and of all that stuff, eventually, out of all that stuff, there's more revenue. Like that's the stuff that comes out the bottom end, but it very predictably comes out the bottom end. But the little thing, I love what you said, like, okay, I'm gonna like let them fail now and so forth. And the idea is like, yeah, but as they fail, everything's getting better and better and better and better and better. Just, like you go through college, it's like, oh, this calculus thing. Oh, I can't do this. It's like, and then at the end of the year, you pass this final that you never would have passed, 9 months ago. So yeah, because you got better and better and better every day, every test, you just get better. You're just planning for that future, better, better, better.
Yeah. Well, David, this has been great. And one of the things I realized about you instantly is we could talk for hours, and I wish we could go on, but we need to wrap up.
Sure.
So now your business is you're coaching other dentists, helping them achieve some of the successes that you had. And name of your business is Ultimate Success in Dentistry. How did people reach you?
Well, I'm really easy to reach. It's I don't hide. So, but easiest thing probably is just our website. And so I'll say it, and I'll say it intentionally, which is it doesn't have a .com. So it's ultimatesuccess.dentist. So ultimatesuccess.dentist. There's no .com, .net, .anything like that. There's none of that. It's just ultimatesuccess.dentist. And then if you look at it and you're in your car and you're driving, it's like, how am I ever gonna remember that? There's another, the second book we have has a thought in it. And that thought is 4m40.com. So if you can remember that easier, 4m40.com, you can type it in as a number, as a letter, as a word, whatever that comes up, that just directs you back to the same place. So once you get on there, there's some freebies that we have, on leadership and so forth that please help yourselves to that. That my cell phone number is right available on there as far as reaching me. It's like I'm really easy to reach. So.
Well, that's awesome. Well, what I've enjoyed about this conversation is the insights that you've shared don't require that you be a dentist to benefit from them. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing these insights. Thank you, Dr. Pierce.
Thank you, Craig. Appreciate the time. Well done.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.